in a time where dissenting voices are silenced, suppressed, and deleted, this is your place to hear the raw, real truth about what's going on in this crazy world and how you can hold your power and thrive in life through it all. Here, we cut through the BS big tech censorship to bring you what you really need to hear to help you remember the infinite potential and power that you hold. From spiritual connection to natural health remedies, history and corruption, to mindset, manifestation, and so much more. This is the place to hear the truth and to be inspired. Welcome to the Uncensored Truth Podcast with me, Dr. Seth Gerlach. In this episode, we talk to Dr. Joe Yee. Dr. Joe is one of the funniest people I've ever met. So you're going to love this episode when he talks about his psychedelic experience, how he's using psychedelics in his practice, future of psychiatry and medicine. We get into why so many Americans are anxious and depressed. We even talk about the future financial system, what's going on, all kinds of stuff. I know you'll love it. Enjoy. What's up, everybody? What's up, Dr. Joe?
What's up, Dr. Seth Gerlach? So good to finally see you again, man.
You too, dude. It's been way too long. So Dr. Joe and I were in HFFH together, did some stuff, interviewed some people, collabed. Just an awesome dude. I feel like I'm interviewing the interviewer here. You're just like, you interview everybody.
So
I've got some pressure.
Happy and honored to be here and to be on the other side, being asked the questions instead of asking the other person the question.
I bet that is nice every once in a while. We're going to talk all about Joe Yee's experience today. A lot of stuff to get into. I'll first just introduce him here real quick. So Dr. Joe Yee, he's a board-certified addiction psychiatrist, and he specializes in holistic psychiatry and medication detoxification. After graduation from medical school, Dr. Yee, feels weird calling you that, went on to his psychiatry residency at Cooper University Hospital. So he was there in Camden, New Jersey, where he learned how to treat some of the most challenging cases of psychiatric addiction and detox patients. And as a resident physician, he got to apprentice under Dr. Joel Fuhrman. That's pretty awesome. And so since starting his solo practice in 2009, Dr. Joe has helped thousands of patients throughout Pennsylvania overcome their dependency on opiates, alcohol, and other prescription meds. Awesome. He integrates motivational counseling, nutritional therapy, exercise, science, yoga, and spirituality. Super cool. Can't wait to dive into all that. And more recently, Dr. Yee has been venturing into the world of psychedelics. Let's talk about that. And here to share his personal experiences in the future of psychiatry. So, man, what a bio. Super excited to dive into all this, man.
Yeah, man. I'm honored to be here and connecting with you and the good people's listening to this and watching this too, I guess.
Nice. So if you don't follow Dr. Joe on IG, I'm going to put the link below in the show notes. Go do that right now because you're not going to miss all of his lives and all of his hilarious videos. I mean, like, you're my favorite account on IG by far.
Yeah.
I'll be in the office here and I'll make, all right, guys, come here. You got it. Dr. Joe has a new video. Let's watch it together. It's just the humor. Your brain is just so different from like everything else I've seen. Your sense of humor, I find it hilarious. Where does your inspiration come from? And like for all these videos,
the inspiration comes from my pain, man. You know, people think that I'm actually doing something good for society, but honestly, man, like I need, you know, it's so crazy in my life, and everyone else listening to this, I'm sure, can relate. That for me, creating content is like my therapeutic relief. It's my way of like, okay, this is how I feel. People can resonate with it. I get a laugh out of it. Other people do too. And just a way to make myself on a selfish level feel better. And if people can resonate with that, I'm grateful. You know, but it's therapeutic.
Well, awesome. And I think it's resonating with a lot of people. And I think you're so good at that edutainment, where it's like entertainment, and people don't even know they're learning something, you know? And I think that's one of the best ways we can help people today. Cause I mean, you have to break, I feel like breaking through with humor unlocks different parts of the brain. You can tell me you're a psychiatrist, but to resonate with people at a different level.
Yeah, but also it's a great way to not get deleted also, right? On social media, if I have a certain stance on certain medical products and so on, if I could make a joke out of it with my daughter and I pay her $5, now with inflation, it's gone up to like 10 bucks. They're not stupid. They understand that the $5 ain't worth $5 anymore. So you pay them and then you get your kids in the skid and have a talk about masks or whatever. And yeah, it's flown under the IG gods in getting deleted and censored. So,
and you never got deleted, right?
On TikTok, I did. And, you know, for the people who follow my account, they know the story. But yeah, I had over 500,000 followers on TikTok when TikTok was starting. So right now, if I still had that account, probably have a couple million. But yeah, man, they weren't happy about my stance on certain medical products, which I said that it usually takes about, you know, 5 to 10 years for this thing to get developed, which I think is a conservative estimate, too. And, you know, I got deleted for saying that. So. And I was right. I mean, there's no dispute about that, except for the most recent one. So,
right.
Yeah.
And that's what's crazy. And on this platform, we can say whatever we want. It's safe for now, we think. But that's why I started the podcast. It's like, I want a platform where I can talk about the stuff that I want to talk about without getting deleted, shadow banned, censored. And so this is called the Uncensored Truth Podcast. So excited to have
you. And
I
know. And for the people watching this, like, Seth, man, you are like one of the nicest dudes I've ever met. I know we don't hang out all the time, but you're just a good dude. Like, I could sense your energy. You and Brad, like, remind your souls, your energy, Dr. Brad Campbell, like, remind me of each other. You know, you guys just awesome. Are just pure good dudes. And for both of you guys to get canned, you got canned a couple times, Brad, probably 3 times, like, it doesn't make sense to me, but you know, now they seem to have eased up with the censorship, so people are talking a little bit more about some of the things they want to talk about.
Yeah, they have. So I don't know, and thank you for that, by the way. I really appreciate that. And they have loosened up, and even like the past couple weeks too. I don't know if you've noticed that, but like, I'm getting more views finally, and I'm actually getting traction on IG at least with followers. Because mm-hmm. there was a point you couldn't find me, and I couldn't grow because they would like followers would get deleted every day. It was bizarre. Anyways. We'll talk about other stuff today. I do want to talk about, so you went into this field, right? Psychiatry, you MD, went through all this stuff. I do want to talk about that. But like, so anxiety, I'm looking at numbers from the CDC. This is Dr. Joe's CDC trademark name there. 27% of American adults have anxiety. 15 million Americans plus with depression. I think it might be more than that. You tell me. And as I looked at this, I was looking at anxiety in particular. It said 27% of American adults have anxiety. Only about 4% worldwide adults have anxiety. What's going on in America with people? Like, what is causing these issues?
Yeah. And also to add to that, I discovered recently that since the year 2000, there's been a 35% increase in suicide rates in America. So yeah, man, no disrespect to anyone having anxiety, but I've had experiences with anxiety and depression, and I take anxiety over depression any day. Like, when you're really depressed, it sucks, man. And again, no disrespect to anyone who had like severe PTSD and anxiety, OCD, but they all suck. But so here's my theory on this, because I don't think anyone knows for exact certain, but I think one thing is the quality of our foods aren't the way it used to be in the past. So we, of course, know that like our soil isn't as nutritious as it used to be. So the plants are grown in soil, and then they don't have the nutrients that they once had back in the day. And then the animals are eating these malnourished plants, and then we're eating malnourished animals too, and plants. So I think that has a huge impact on the basic chemistry of our brain. Like, you know, a lot of these psychiatric medications, if you think about it, they manipulate or influence serotonin, dopamine, endorphins, norepinephrine, GABA. And if you don't have the nutrients to produce these neurotransmitters properly, then something's going to be off. So I think that has a huge impact, our food, not only the lack of nutrients in the foods that we eat that are whole foods, but I'm talking about like also like think about all the processed foods that are out there. You know, like big corporations and anything you watch on TV, like they love to promote hunger over health. They're not talking about the value of like eating like grass-fed beef and real eggs and I don't know, like how delicious mangoes are. You don't see mango commercials, but you see a lot of like processed crap. And in my practice, it's amazing, man. Like I have patients who actually believe that eating Pop-Tarts in the morning is a good thing because there's strawberry jam in there and they're getting their serving of fruit for the day. Like people like this exist. You know, so, you know, I understand that the people watching this podcast are a lot more enlightened to basic elements of like what's healthy for you to eat. But, you know, you'd be very surprised the mass general population. There's a reason why 42% of Americans are obese, not even overweight, but obese. homeless people are obese. Like, how does that even happen? But it's a processed food madness. So I think food has a tremendous amount to deal with why people are feeling depressed and anxious. The big, big, big thing, man, is I'm sure you know, over the past decade plus, social media, man, that is killing our youth mentally, physically, spiritually. I don't know if you know that Facebook was born somewhere around 2006, and the smartphone, the iPhone, came about in 2007. And then by 2010 or 2011, like half of Americans had Facebook or some sort of social media app on their mobile devices. And that's, you know, got people super, super addicted. Because as you know, the content is not only very addicting, but it allows people to like constantly compare themselves to other people, especially with girls. They cannot keep up with the beauty standards and how everyone else is partying a certain way and hanging out with certain people and eating foods. People love to post how well they're eating. So it's like you're always missing out. You're always not enough. I think that's in conjunction with like the dopamine dumping. We get our dopamine fixes from social media and some of these fun things that we're seeing, little bits of like 1 minute informational pieces now turn into 30 seconds, now turn into 8 seconds. So I think the social media is like really messing with our brain chemistry and what's acceptable. Because if we're spending so much time staring at a screen that's so stimulating, and then all of a sudden you detach from that, the real world is not as interesting. So I think it's also the byproduct has been that people have been disconnected from one another, more connected with the matrix, disconnected with this 3D reality. And that has a huge impact on why people are feeling more depressed and anxious. Like I noticed that social skills wise, people just aren't as social as they used to be. And I think they're just so used to communicating by this, by typing things and staring at the screen with other people, that they forget how to like really connect with others in real life. Maybe not you, maybe not for the audience here, but the mass general, absolutely. And the third thing, so one thing is like food, two, social media, and not to get all weird on you and your audience, man, but, and I have no proof of this is just my theory, but I believe that this 5G radiation is definitely effing up with people's like psyche. Something is up where just over the years, like I know that people have been under a tremendous amount of stress with the pandemic and everything, but this 5G radiation, like it cannot be a good thing when you have like EMFs all throughout. It's like this low dose microwave all throughout, like that cannot be good for our mind, body, and spiritual health. So I believe that it's just getting to this point where it's catching up to us and it's affecting our psyche. So I wish I had proof on that. But that's just my theory, the third one.
Yeah. And it's hard. You're not going to find a lot of funded studies on EMFs. Same thing with a lot of these meds or foods. Like you're not going to find a lot of studies on the benefits of mangoes, because like, where's the money in it, you know? But you can see, you know, from real life experience, you know, clusters of people with cancers around cell towers. And so there's just, you know, a case in Europe, things like that. But that's where we have to follow these breadcrumbs. So like someone comes in, they sit down with you and they're like, "Doc, I'm depressed. I don't know what's going on." So you're walking through these three big things first. Like what other questions are you asking? And then because I've seen like some of your stuff in interaction with people, like where do you take that? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. So I would say that greater than 50% of the people that are walking through that door wouldn't need to see me or you for that matter, if they followed the four basic pillars of mental wellness, which is pretty much for health in general. You got to sleep right. You got to eat right. Got to move your body right and connect with the right people. And if, you know, so that's usually like how I screen people. And usually three or four of those things are off when these people come in to see me. Now, there are cases where people are sleeping right, they're eating right, they're exercising their mind and body right, and they're connecting with the right people. And for whatever reason, they are still very, very depressed. I've actually had a couple of like fitness guys coming in and, you know, but these are some of these guys that had like some crazy ass trauma in the past. It has definitely like carried over for decades into their life, which is horrible, man. I can't imagine what it's like to have like that level of PTSD. But you know, they're still doing the right things. They just don't feel good. But then there are other people who like, I really do believe that's for whatever reason, like genetically or their brain chemistry is just off. They do the right things, but they just don't feel good. So in those cases, I do offer some medications for some people sometimes. And I know, Western medicine isn't very popular amongst our crew, but sometimes I think it's necessary to have a Band-Aid for a wound.
Yeah. And do you use that short term or what's, and then while you help them with all this other stuff, or just stay on it for a longer period?
Everyone and their mother says that they don't want to be on a medication long term, but sometimes when they're on it and they notice the way they feel differently on it, and they're feeling better, they're thinking better, they're behaving better, they don't want to come off of it. And I'm the one that's like, okay, like, can we try to cut down on these meds? You know, and also like I inherit patients from other doctors who are on like these ridiculous regimens. Like there's no reason why someone needs to be on like 3 or 4 different antidepressants, you know, you just,
yeah.
So I do a lot of like medication detoxing and tapering. And sometimes we get to a level where we shave off like 2 meds and we're just on a low dose of 1 or 2 of them. And then like, they don't want to come down anymore. So then at that point, like I continue it, but with these psych meds, people have to understand, and I'm sure there are some people watching, listen to this who are on psych meds, but the idea is always that like these psych meds, like, okay, let me give you something for anxiety. Let me give you something for depression. Let me give you something for sleep and for your attention, that they all synergistically like help out with anxiety, depression, attention, sleep. But what people fail to recognize is you're constantly putting some form of a poison into your body. A chemical is a poison. Like you're not going to OD on a bowl of blueberries, but if I give you a bowl of prescription pills, you will die, you know, depending on what it is. So, you know, if you just put a little bit of poison into a cup of water every single day and you drink that for a day or two, maybe you wouldn't notice much. But after about a year or two, that's going to catch up to you. And that's what I noticed with these psych meds. Like over an extended period of time, the side effects seem to culminate and have like synergistic effects, anti-effects on one, on a person. So then you have these weight gains and some people just feel more depressed over time from antidepressants. And like you said before, Big Pharma's not going to put fun studies to see like why that is. But I really do believe that if you're putting all these chemicals into your body, it catches up to you over an extended period of time. So I try not to keep patients on medications for too long. I do believe Band-Aids are necessary for some people when they're really hurt, but that's not the cure. And we all know that.
Yeah. So when I was a teenager, I was really sick and I was on a couple of antidepressants as well as like muscle relaxers, migraine meds, all this kind of stuff. And it was like this toxic soup for me. But when I eventually was able to get off these, we learned I was exposed to mold and I had like parasites, all this crazy stuff. And I'm seeing that a lot in my patients today too, if like mold really affecting people's brains and parasites and Lyme. Do you see stuff like that too? Or is that like just me?
See, this is why I have so much respect for the naturopathic doctors. Like, honestly, man, if I had to do it all over again, I would never go back to Western allopathic school because we don't learn about any of this stuff, bro. Like, nothing. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if you had training in your school, you know, but I would say from the naturopathic doctors that I spoke to, like, they actually do these kind of tests to check for parasites and mold and so on. So we don't do that here. But yeah, man, if I had to do it again, I would go the naturopathic route because I don't have experience in like testing for stool samples to see if there's like parasites in there. But I do refer to the naturopaths that do that kind of work. But, and it only makes sense. I actually had a friend who had like severe OCD and she was on like every single psychiatric medication you can imagine. And then she finally went to this naturopathic doctor, discovered that there was a parasitic infection. Once they got rid of the parasite, her OCD resolved. So yeah. Like this happen. I just don't do that kind of work in my practice.
Sure. So I know recently you got into psychedelics. So I want to talk about your experience with that too. But what turned you on to psychedelics in the first place?
Well, so did you know that I was a musician before I went to medical school?
I think I don't know. That. So what instruments did you play?
I play guitar, bass, like keyboards, backup vocals. So I just really wanted to make it into the music industry. And what happened was I got into medical school and I hated it. Like, you know, I thought being a doctor was like what it's going to be like on TV. But when I got there and I realized that like I actually have to like cut open a body and study the parts and memorize all these nerves, and I just didn't like gross anatomy and biochemistry and all this stuff. So I took some time off to do music. And it was during that time that I've done a lot of like, put a lot of like substances into my body, including like MDMA, ketamine, psilocybin, marijuana, cocaine, you name it, opioids. Got to party a lot. And at the time it was fun. And then it wasn't so much fun after I got sick after 3 years of putting all these chemicals into my body. And then I couldn't get a record deal, so I went back to medical school. But the point being is, like, I really felt like I learned about psychedelics and substances and all this stuff because I'm an addiction, board certified addiction doctor. Mm-hmm. I learned all that during those 3 years trying to make it into the music industry. I didn't really learn much in medical school and or residency for that matter. So yeah. That's why I brought up the music thing. But that's how I got the real experience there. And that was like in my 20s. But more from recently...
From the streets, because you're the street MD.
Street MD. Yeah, exactly. But more recently, man, I've been very frustrated, just like so many of the people watching and listening to this, man. Because we all know that Western medicine doesn't cure anything necessarily. Maybe surgery, but generally speaking, man, it's all about like masking symptoms and masking wounds. So I just got frustrated, and I started a supplement line a few years back, and we could talk about that later. But I also wanted like some other way that I could help people help heal themselves. Because ultimately, as a doctor, I'm kind of like the shaman. I'm not the one healing you, man. I'm like assisting you and holding space for you on your journey. But I just got sick and tired of masking wounds, man. So there's been a lot of promise in ketamine therapy. And I've been resisting going into that realm because I'm like, dude, I used to snort ketamine all the time while doing ecstasy at Twilo back in my 20s. So I can't, in my good consciousness, offer this for patients, you know, for depression, like treatment-resistant depression. But a friend of mine out in the West Coast, he's been doing it for years, treating patients with it. And he's like, dude, like you're missing out. Like you don't understand. This is something that could help people actually heal. So I flew out to the West Coast in October of 2022. And I trained under this guy. And I went in there with the intent of like, okay, let me learn how to do this for other people. Because obviously I'm fine. I'm perfect. Little did I know, man, I had some serious shadow work to do, man, because the psychedelic experience with ketamine allowed me to see certain things that I was not prepared to see. And it wasn't like traumatic or anything, but it was like, holy shit. Because Seth, I don't know if you realize, but 90 to 95% of your behavior is dictated by your subconsciousness, the right. Stuff that you don't even think about. And so a ketamine trip allows you to really dig into your subconsciousness and see certain things that you've been repressing, which offers you an opportunity to do some shadow work if you choose to engage. So I saw certain things. And from then on, like from how much it's helped me with various aspects of my life, I decided to train in it and offer it to my clients here in this office. And so far, the response has been amazing. And then from that, I was like, you know what? Let me check out this ayahuasca business. So I went on an ayahuasca ceremony there afterwards, and then I went on to Amsterdam to do some research, quote unquote, with MDMA and psilocybin because it's all like decriminalized there. Mm-hmm. I'm back now, and I'm happy to talk to you about all this stuff.
Dude, that's awesome. So we'll start with ketamine because that's kind of what you're using. And what is the process like if someone is going and getting help with ketamine in treatment setting? You know, what's the route? How do people take it? What do you expect? And then like afterwards, what happens too?
I'm really glad you asked that question, man, because right now ketamine treatment is like the wild, wild west. There isn't like any official regulation other than a doctor needs to be or someone needs to hold space for the patient for about 2 hours just to make sure that they go through the experience and they're mentally cognizant to like walk out of the office, but they can't drive back home. So you need a family member to drive them. But there isn't like official training. Can you believe that, man? Ketamine treatment, there isn't like an official board or an official body or an establishment that says like this is exactly how you are supposed to do it. So ketamine has been around since the 70s for anesthetic purposes. It's a dissociative anesthesia. But more recently, like I think about 5 years ago or so, it got approved for treatment-resistant depression. And there isn't a standard way of going about this. So you could the danger of this is like you could go to some like ketamine clinic and some anesthesiologist wants to just make some money. So they just inject you with ketamine and then some nurse tech is holding space for you by your side for 2 hours and then you go home. And there are patients who came to me saying that they had some bad experiences. So it's very important that anyone listening to this, if they are interested in ketamine treatment, that they do it with someone who has like some mental health backgrounds, you know, a psychiatrist with a therapist, a combo like that. So it's usually a medical doctor for the first hour and the second hour is with a therapist. The first hour is when the medical doctor is administering the ketamine. And that's when they're in that dissociative state. They go out and have that psychedelic journey. And then the second hour is when they're like kind of back to planet Earth and they process it with the therapist. So that's kind of generally how it works.
So the quote unquote trip is about an hour or so, or a little bit less. Is that right?
Absolutely. So I would say the intensity is probably like 30 minutes where you feel like you've lost control of your mind and you just like, I believe, and maybe many people watching this too, probably believe that we are conscious energy in a meat suit. So our conscious energy gets dissociated from our body and we just go on this journey. And sometimes it could be scary for some people, but if you just know that you're going to come back to planet Earth in like 30 minutes, you'll be fine. And you just let go. Then it takes you on this like journey and it shows you, you have a blindfold on. So whatever you're seeing and the music, this is very important. Not only do you have blindfolds on, but you're listening to hopefully really good music that could help assist you on this path, this process. So for the 30 minutes, you just surrender to it, allow the medicine to do its thing. And that's basically the 30 minutes of like losing control. And then you kind of gain control for the second half an hour. And then the second hour of the visit of your experience with your team, that's when you're doing the thing with the psychotherapy with a good clinical therapist. That's why it's so important to have a good relationship with the therapist when you start something like this. But sometimes some people go to these anesthesia like ketamine clinics and you just have a med tech and you're just sitting there and you don't know what just happened. So, it's still the wild, wild west right now for ketamine therapy, unfortunately.
So that second hour, is it kind of reintegration from what you've seen back to the real world type thing? How do you process this moving forward?
Yes, exactly. There are like three different ways that ketamine therapy can help people. So it's specifically for people with treatment resistant depression, but also tremendous success in people with like PTSD, anxiety, panic disorders, and so on. But I actually don't believe that you have to have a serious medical condition to experience a ketamine trip or a psychedelic trip for that matter, because it really allows you to see things from a different perspective. For example, like if you are someone who have always seen the world through the lens of CNN, and that's the only view of the world that you have, you know, it could be a pretty depressing place if that's all you see. But then what if you saw, after you do a psychedelic trip, it expands your consciousness so that you see it from the perspective of Fox News. And you're like, oh, okay, well, I guess there's a different perspective on things. And then you also see from the perspective of ESPN and the Weather Channel and Tennis Channel and also Netflix. And you see all these other shows and all these other things that are possibly even more important than whatever you were seeing on CNN. That's what psychedelics do for you. It allows you to have a different perspective on life, like all psychedelics, I would say. So that's one of the ways it helps. Another way it helps is just like we were talking about before, it allows you to go deep into your subconsciousness and gives you an opportunity to do some potential shadow work, like really see what's hidden under there, what might be holding you back. And then that's a way of like potentially liberating yourself from your past. Also, I don't know if you're aware, but ketamine activates a certain part of your gene called the mTOR region, which acts like a switch, which serves like as a steroid for your nervous system, where it allows your neurons to grow and develop new neuroplastic connections. So, you know, like a lot of people I've noticed amongst my clients, they wake up in the morning and they automatically feel like shit. Like they have anxiety. They just feel depressed. And their brain is wired a certain way to already think in that fear, dark space. But what if we could kind of reset the nervous system and help the neurons grow in a different path where it at least gives you an opportunity to start thinking positive and saying, all right, I'm grateful for my kids. I'm grateful for the fact that I could walk and I have access to clean water. I make a living right now and I'm grateful for that. Like there are positive things or things that you could think about that are right. People have a hard time focusing on the gratitude and namaste way of thinking because they're wired a certain way. So ketamine offers a new opportunity to reset and develop new neuronal connections in that way. And last but not least, the way ketamine helps out is that we all know about the dopamine reward center. You know, dopamine makes you feel like pleasure, motivation, and focus, and you feel good. Well, there's the dopamine antithesis, like the evil twin called the lateral habenula center. And this is the part of your brain that's responsible for holding on to dark, disappointing memories. And a lot of times people who are very depressed have like traumatic past or just like things that they hold on to that are very disappointing, they feel awful about, and it weighs them down. Interestingly, ketamine suppresses that area and allows the dopamine reward system to be free from the chains of the lateral habenula dark depressing center. So ketamine has like, it's still very early on for mental health treatment, but from what I see so far, it's very safe and has tremendous potential for offering people, again, an opportunity to heal themselves.
I use core formulas personally and with my clients. I like them because of what they don't have, fillers and junk that your body does not need. Their line of supplements addresses the foundations of health, including gut health, brain and stress support, detox, and drainage. You can support your most important body systems with their Core 4 bundle, including Gut Makeover, Bowel Complete, Drainage Essentials, and the Be Happy Bees. Check out shopcoreformulas.com and enter Dr. Seth 15 for 15% off your first order. Now back to the show. And what I've seen, I've done some diving into psychedelics that just interest me. This is super fascinating to me. So have you seen that, you know, a dose or even a few doses like this helps people long term as compared to like an antidepressant or something you're taking every day, right? Are you seeing like brain changes that are long lasting?
I would say for a few months. But it depends on a person, and I'm really glad you brought this up, because when you do ketamine treatment, for the first 3 days, I would say for about 72 hours, your brain, your neurons are more flexible, more malleable, and it could develop new neuronal connections, and it's looking for that. So your brain is very suggestible to, like, it's more easily to influence yourself. So yeah. One of the things that I like to be public about is that I had a long-term issue with nicotine. I don't know if you knew, Seth, but I was a longtime smoker and I switched over to the vape pen a couple years ago. And, you know, no matter what I did, man, it was so difficult for me to quit that. Like I would stop it for like maybe a few weeks, a month at most. And then something would happen. I'd go back into it. And my wife, my partners, they'd be like, dude, man, you're a doctor. You're an addiction doctor. Like, and you're smoking vapes. I'm like, I know, like I've done a lot of things and I've conquered a lot of things, but this one thing. And by the way, the nicotine vape is like exponentially more addictive than tobacco, just so you know. So one of the worst things you could do. And it was so difficult for me to stop. But then when I went for my ketamine training, I had a psychedelic vision of me bowing down to a demonic figure giving me a vape pen. And once I saw that, it was startling, man. And I was like, wow, like evil exists in this world. Evil has evolved. And this is one, well, like, what better way to take someone out instead of trying to kill someone, get them to kill themselves? So much easier.
Yeah.
And once I saw that, and everyone knows that like smoking is bad for you, but once I saw that on a psychedelic journey, that's when I never touched it again afterwards. So I'm over 100 days clean. Wow. And during that time, when I was in the training, I trained my brain to like think about the vape pen and think about nausea and I train my brain to see it as like submitting to evil, and I refuse to do that. So now that's like engraved in my brain. And so, yeah, there could be long lasting changes. But you and I, of course, know that because 42% of Americans are obese, some of these people are not the most disciplined human beings on the planet. So, yeah, when they do a ketamine treatment, like for a week or two, they might feel like pretty good, like I feel positive and whatever, but they're not willing to do the work. They're not willing to tell their brains, like, I really enjoy eating clean foods. I really enjoy going to the gym. I really enjoy being positive and surrounding myself with people of like positive influences. They are not willing to do the work. That's why we have so many people on prescription medications. They want the medications to do the work for them. So to answer your question, I think it depends on the person.
Yeah. So the psychedelics can be the key that opens the door to get them, but they still have to walk through it and do some of this work. But I know even, you know, like I think Ron White, the comedian, he did ayahuasca, stopped drinking instantly. I want to talk about ayahuasca because I know you went down to the jungle to do this. And I want to hear about like the whole experience. So like, what does it entail? Like, how did it feel? What were you seeing and things like that?
Yeah, so people say that like ayahuasca is something that calls upon you. And I imagine that a lot of your listeners are into the like the wellness community, like they're spiritual people. And, you know, some people probably already had experience with ayahuasca. And I think everyone knows what I'm talking about who have done ayahuasca, that like Mother Ayahuasca calls upon you. And at the time I was like, whatever, man. But I felt like over the years it's been calling me. And dude, like 2023 has been a really crazy year, man. I don't know what it is, but something about this year has been very different from any other year of my life. And I just felt like I was called to experience this, especially after the ketamine experiences too. Like, all right, let me venture more into this. So one thing led to another, and I got hooked up with the shaman in the Dominican Republic. Word has it on the streets that this guy is the shaman of the shamans. Like, he brews his own ayahuasca, and like his stuff is the best, and he knows what he's doing. So I went into the jungle, met with him, and the first thing that in shamanic medicine, I got to tell you, man, shamanic medicine could be really dirty. It's very messy, but it gets the job done. And I have so much respect for the shamans and the way they do it out there in the jungle. But the first thing that they wanted me to do is they wanted me to experience rapé. Have you ever heard of that? Rapé? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Have you ever done it?
No.
Bro, it's crazy, man. It is so wild. And so basically in shamanic plant medicine, like tobacco is a sacred medicine, is a sacred plant. Mm-hmm. In fact, when these shamans go out there and take like plant medicines from nature, they blow smoke or tobacco back to nature as like a currency exchange out of respect. Now, if someone blew smoke in our face, we'd be upset by that. But apparently in plant medicine, that is like a very honorable thing. So when I was there, they said that I needed to be on a certain diet. They told me not to eat meat, especially pork, because it could really mess with the spiritual experience. And then when I got there, they blew rapé, the smokeless tobacco, up to my nose. And they didn't tell me like how intense that experience was going to be, but I thought I was dying, man. It was like they blew it into my right nostril first, and I started immediately like coughing and like crying, and I just like couldn't breathe. And then the shaman was like, okay, now we got to do the left nostril, and I just did it, and then that made it even worse. And after about like 5 minutes of like intense mental pain. And physical pain too, because you just like, it hurts and you just can't see anything. You can't breathe. Then everything just calmed down. And then any sort of like toxic thoughts that might have been ruminating in the back of your head somewhere, radio silence. And I was in a complete state of bliss. And I was like, whoa, like this stuff is legit, man. Like this wow. Works. So that was my first
day. That's the prep for the ayahuasca, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. And then the next day I met with the different shaman who did the ayahuasca ceremony. And I drank the first cup. I didn't really feel much. And then about an hour afterwards, he came back and he said, okay, now this is the real cup. And the second cup took me into a different state of being. And I don't want to influence the people listening to this who may be interested in participating in an ayahuasca ceremony. It's not legal here in the United States, but if they're going to go overseas like Peru, Dominican, Mexico, so on, because I don't want to scare people, because everyone's going to have a different experience. Some people go and they have this blissful, beautiful, magical experience where they connect with God and everything's perfect. But me, I had a pretty intense experience. Like it was the most intense 7 hours of my life. And I did feel like I was dying, and I did feel like I experienced death and what it might be like after life here. And there was moments where I felt like I went to hell. And then when I came back out of the trip after about 7-8 hours or so, I've come to realize that heaven has been in front of me this whole time. So it was a tremendously positive experience. But I will say for that 7-8 hours, it wasn't so much fun.
I've heard that about ayahuasca. It's not like a party drug. We're not going there to feel good. It's you're going to get your ass kicked sometimes. And a lot of that it is for you to see the beauty around you. But dude, that sounds brutal. 7 hours of that. So were you vomiting and having all the purge too?
Yes. I was vomiting. I had to go to the bathroom. And I just like one thing that I want to say here is that ayahuasca, I truly believe, has a consciousness. You know, not to sound all kooky and new agey on you, but I really believe that that plant has a consciousness that's serving your greater good, actually. And, you know, you go on these psychedelic journey with like psilocybin, MDMA, ketamine, so on. But something about ayahuasca, it's teaching you. Like you're in for a course, and it shows you exactly what you need to see and experience. And for me, the first thing that happened was the shaman told me not to drink water that day after 9 a.m. So because he wanted me to get the full experience, like no food, no water. So, of course, people know that if you don't eat anything and then you take an oxycodone or Percocet, one of these opioids, you feel it more. That's why a lot of these drug addicts are like emaciated. They starve themselves and then they take the drug. They get more of the desired effects. But he wanted me to consume this on an empty stomach with no water either. So I stopped drinking water at 9 a.m. I started drinking the ayahuasca around 4 p.m. And dude, by like 6 p.m., the ayahuasca made the dehydration experience like intensely, exponentially worse. And, you know, I know people have done fasting and stuff like that, but there's a huge difference between fasting from food and fasting from water. It's messed up. And it was so bad that I was like asking the shaman if I could have like a small little sip of water just to like cleanse my mouth. And, you know, he basically was doing his shamanic thing where it's like, you are in control of your life. If you want that, go drink some water. But I'm like, I know, I want to get the full experience. Like, what do you recommend as a shaman here? Is like, you do what you want to do. You know, you are in control of your life. You have the choice. And so I elected not to, because like, I want to get the full experience. And then after about another hour, he saw that I was dying. So he brought like this small little cup of water. And I'm telling you, Seth, at that moment, it doesn't matter how much you love your kids, you know, how much you value money or power or status or your girlfriend. None of that stuff matters, man. When you're dying of thirst, it goes back to Maslow's hierarchy of needs.
Right.
Food, water, shelter, man. It's a very humbling experience. Like love, relationships, family, like none of that stuff matters at that time. All you want is that little bit of water. And that was like ayahuasca's way of reminding me to appreciate the basic things in life that I have right now. Because I think me, you, and a lot of people watching this have a tendency to like, oh yeah, like not really truly feel present with what they have in front of them and feel blessed by that. And so it's like, oh man, I gotta like get that promotion. I gotta make a little bit more money. I need a new boyfriend, girlfriend, whatever it is. Like they always want more for themselves and their kids. And this was a very humbling way of ayahuasca saying like, look, motherfucker, like you need to appreciate the fact that you have access to clean water, food, oxygen. Like you could breathe right now too. Like some people have problems breathing because they have lung disease. So like appreciate the basic ass things that you have in your life. And I need my spoiled ass needed to see that. So that was my very first lesson. So like that's what I mean. Like ayahuasca teaches you things that you weren't prepared for, but really profound stuff, man.
So that was a big punch in the face, sound like, when you went right into that. So then the day after, how did you feel? What'd you do? Like, were you doing some integrating? Like, what was going on?
So the day after, I thanked the shaman and I was like, oh man, like I really appreciated the experience and I can't wait to come back next year to do another round with you. And he goes, oh, well, we got some. So the first day was just me and the shaman, right? So, but he goes, oh, we got five other people coming today. And come to think of it, I would love for you to be a part of this ceremony too, because these guys are all recovering drug addicts and you're an addiction doctor. So it might be good. Like, I think Mother Ayahuasca wants you to be here as a part of this ceremony. So that was so scary, man, because again, if you go through 7-8 hours of hell only to come back that you're in heaven and you're like in a state of like bliss, but still you were in hell for 7 hours and he's inviting you back into hell. I want to be Michael Jackson bad. So I was like, oh man, I don't want to walk, because I know if I walk away from this, like I'm going to regret it. I'm going to feel like a wuss. So I did accept. And the second day was worse in terms of like the intensity of it. And again, I want the people listening to this to know that that doesn't mean that it's going to happen to you. And overall, would I ever go back to doing this? Absolutely. So I want to preface it by saying that overall it was a very positive experience and I would definitely go back again to experience this again. But the second day, man, it was a lesson about like love, because, you know, there's certain people in my life that I look at and it's like, oh, you know, I've done this for you. And how come I'm not getting this love back? Like, why is it always about you know, attend to your needs. Like, how about my needs? And like, if you really love me, you do this, that, and the other for me. But ayahuasca, in a very painful way, reminded me that when you really love somebody, it's about giving to that person. It's not about you. Like, you got to focus on, you know, to love is to give. That was the message that I got. So for example, like things with my wife, things with my family, instead of like, why isn't my wife making me the kind of meals that I would want her to make me after I work really hard? It's kind of like, how can I make her life easier? What could I do to give to her? And ironically, by thinking that way, she has made more loving meals for me. So, and I'm leaving out a lot of like how I came to this realization, but ayahuasca has this amazing way of helping you download information, and it's up to you to work on it if you choose to. So I chose to, and sometimes it could be painful, but like, I feel like things like this is where the cure lies in, like where true healing lies in. And there are people watching this saying, oh, but I don't need ayahuasca. I don't need ketamine to do any of this stuff. I probably come to these realizations on my own. True, but I would say psychedelics could definitely help accelerate the process of coming to certain realizations that you might be oblivious over.
Yeah, super interesting. So your second day, punch you in the mouth again, but we got some good realizations. We got some things to take home. So what happened then after that day? Are you still there? Are you still doing stuff? Are you integrating?
Yeah.
Big downloads? What's going on?
That's when you spend some time with the shaman, processing what you've learned. And I got to tell you, man, like, I've learned more from that dude. And he doesn't even speak English. It was all translated through his wife. And I probably learned more from that dude than I have in probably all of medical school, just from those like 3 days that I spent with him. I was there for the week, but 3 days was when, you know, of the whole time I was there with the shaman. I wanted to add that too, that the second day when we're doing it with the other guys, the second day I did it in a group, and these guys were like, they offered 3 shots of ayahuasca. I did 2 and I cashed out. I was like, I can't do anymore, man. This is like absolutely bonkers right now. But these other guys, they received the 3rd dose. And I can't tell you, like, I was looking at that and like, man, these guys are brave. Like, I thought I was bad. These guys are like beyond bad in terms of bravery and courage. And so they took it. Some of these dudes were like on the ground because we're doing the ceremony outside and they're like twitching. The other guy was like shitting in the corner. The other guy was like throwing up. Other people like making sounds. You know, because they were clearly seeing certain things that they weren't ready to see either, facing their demons. And the shaman's just sitting there, just giving his lecture and just talking about life. And I'm just looking around like, shouldn't we do something to help these guys? And he's like, no. Let them process it. Let them deal with it. Allow them to face it. And I thought that was so powerful, man, because here in Western society, man, like, anyone has, you know, a little bit of like anxiety or whatever they're going through, it's like they're very quick to say, like, here's a Xanax to help calm that, or here's a Zoloft to help with your depression. But since then, I've been coming back like, okay, you're experiencing anxiety. Like, okay, let's talk about it. But we need to face it. Like, let's see what it is that may be causing these kind of things. And you might need to like really do some shadow work to face it and overcome it. Because don't allow me to continue to band-aid your wounds here. Like, let's get to the core root of it. But it takes some level of courage to be able to see like what you need to work on. So I learned a lot from the shaman, and he's influenced me for the better to treat my clients a certain way, to actually create results at the end of the day instead of just banking on them for constantly coming in as repeat customers, you know?
And I think in America, what we're doing, where it's that comfort that everyone wants to run to right away. And like you said, we're not facing our shit, our trauma or whatever that's influenced our subconscious brain to go through these patterns and our habits that lead us to where we're at with our health and our life and our relationships and our health and our finances. Everything can come back to that. So I think that's one really big promise for psychedelics, at least from, I haven't experienced them, but from an outside perspective of opening this whole door into helping you purge some of this stuff out. You can look at it, clean it up, and set those new paths going forward. I mean, correct me if I'm wrong there, but that's kind of how I see these.
That is. And, you know, people have to be receptive to it too. You know, like, don't expect coming in here and doing a ketamine treatment, and then all of a sudden, like, everything's back to the way is exactly the way you want it. Like, people have to be motivated to do the work. And in my amongst my clientele, I have a lot of like loved ones or parents coming in saying, Johnny needs help with his marijuana problem. And Johnny has no desire to stop using weed. So like, you're not going to get results that way. But yeah, generally speaking, if you're motivated and you're committed and willing to do the work, yeah, it has tremendous potential. Absolutely. And I don't know if you're aware, but so ketamine is legal now for behavioral treatment, but very soon, word has it on the streets, my friend, that in 2024, early 2024, both MDMA and psilocybin, synthetic versions of psilocybin, will be approved. So MDMA is MDMA, formerly known as ecstasy, and psilocybin is the psychedelic component in magic mushrooms. So the synthetic version of that is COMP360. So Big Pharma can't patent something that's natural, so they have a synthetic version called COMP360. And so far, according to their research, it's showing tremendous promise in people with like trauma and depression that are treatment resistant. So, you know, I don't know what to make of their data, but when it comes out, I think this is something that I would potentially offer patients, depending on.
Have you gotten into like microdosing psilocybin or anything like that?
I haven't personally, and I don't have access to it, and technically, I guess it's illegal around here, but I think in Oregon that you're allowed. But there are a lot of people that follow my account and your account too. We have a very similar audience who swear by the benefits of microdosing of psilocybin.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I spoke to someone one time about, you know, psilocybin, some of these things too, how it can open up the brain a little bit more. But one thing I've heard, it's like your brain, one of its jobs is to block out a lot of the stuff that we see, so we're not overstimulated and can't make sense of things. And psychedelics help kind of open that up a little bit, so you can experience more, you know, smell, taste, hear, see, feel, whatever. Yes. It's more like a flood of info to your body. And I've also heard that psilocybin in particular can help purge out trauma, like physically help purge out trauma from your body. So I wonder if these other psychedelics do the same thing too. I don't know.
Yeah, generally speaking, so they recently did found out on brain scans for people doing DMT. And again, they're in phase clinical trials right now to try to approve DMT, the active ingredient in ayahuasca, for behavioral health purposes. And so far, so very good. I think like 57% of the people who participated like don't have depression after like 3 months. So it's promising, but again, according to their data. But the brain scans are showing that different networks and regions of the brain are being hyperconnected with one another. And they believe that that's is what has these antidepressant, not only the antidepressant effects, but contributes to these psychedelic hallucinogenic effects of it. So yeah, like all psychedelics do that, like MDMA, psilocybin, ketamine, and DMT. But the study was done amongst DMT patients on their brain scans. So something about hyperconnecting the brains and allowing them to communicate more efficiently not only contributes to these, like the flood of the senses and the psychedelic experience, but the antidepressant effects as well.
Yeah, and it can affect serotonin receptors and all kinds of stuff too, right?
Yes, yes. So it depends on which ones, but like MDMA acts on serotonin. It triggers the release of serotonin, dopamine, norepinephrine, and oxytocin. So that's a love hormone, and people feel great. They just want to like hold each other and touch each other when they're under that state. Ketamine does also have some actions on boosting serotonin, dopamine, and norepinephrine. But those are the main ones that and psilocybin has it acts on like 5-HT2A receptors, the serotonin receptors. So yes, it has like some like antidepressant and anxiety effects. But for other people, when they take that, they could get into more of a bad trip per se and have more of an anxiety panicky experience as well. So it gets a little tricky with that.
And I'm sure as Big Pharma gets into this, they'll fuck everything up just like they do with everything else. Just because you see, like, you take a whole plant compound, there's so many things that go into that, how it affects the body, the brain, and everything. So when you start to isolate things, at least in my opinion, stuff can start to go a little bit wonky. I mean, you see, like, you know, these people in the jungle have been using ayahuasca for, what, thousands of years. Yeah. Native Americans were using peyote, I think. Yeah. Mexicans were using mushrooms. So it's like this stuff is
been around forever, literally. And these ancient civilizations have used it to connect spiritually, to heal, to do all these things. And now everything's illegal. And now, oh, Big Pharma is coming in with all the stuff they just outlawed in their own form. It's crazy.
Isn't it amazing how, according to the government's like schedule of narcotics, schedule one being the most dangerous, most abuse potential, no medicinal benefits, marijuana's on there. THC's on there. DMT's on there, which so many people throughout the world swear by it, how ayahuasca has helped them. Okay. Mm-hmm. So apparently, and there's no one's thinking of abusing ayahuasca here. Let's be real about that. So no abuse potential with that. Tremendous potential medical psychological benefits. But yeah, it's up there with heroin. And even heroin, opioids in general have some medicinal benefits, although it's like tremendously addicting. But God almighty, man, marijuana and DMT is still on there. So yeah, it's a joke. But interestingly, I asked the shaman, I said, look, how do you feel about the fact that Big Pharma is making synthetic DMT? It's called like SPL-026. It's in clinical trials right now. And the shaman actually, I couldn't believe he said this because he's like as namaste as he gets. But the dude basically said that he believes that ayahuasca will be extinct in about 5 years. So he believes that Big Pharma creating SPL-026 is the natural evolution of ayahuasca. And I was shocked, man, when he said that. I was like, you're telling me that with Big Pharma, like you actually think it's a good idea? And he's like, no, I'm not saying that that's a good thing or a bad thing. I'm just saying that that is the natural evolution. Because in about 5 years, there's way too much demand for ayahuasca right now.
Yeah.
And it takes about 7 to 15 years to grow it. To grow the bark of it. So ayahuasca is composed of two plants. There's like the leaves and the vine or the bark of another. The vine, that thing costs about 7 to 15 years to grow. The leaves are relatively simple, but, and the leaves is like what has more of the DMT experience, but the bark is what has the monoaxonase inhibitor, and that allows the DMT to be more extended release instead of like a short fix.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah. Wow.
Let me tell you about my favorite at-home biohack. If you follow me on the IG, you probably see me jumping in my infrared sauna all the time. This thing is lit. I love it for the amazing health benefits like improved detoxification, increased lymphatic flow, mitochondrial recharge, and cellular health, improved blood pressure and immune function. But also, did you know, studies show that people who sauna multiple times a week have a drastically decreased risk of things like Alzheimer's, dementia, cardiovascular disease, and all-cause mortality. Now, I don't know about you, but that sounds pretty incredible. I love the TheraSage Thera 360 Plus because of its super low EMF. It heats up super quickly. The earthing and gemstone technology built in. It's full spectrum infrared and red light, and it's portable. This thing is plug and go, super easy. If you're ready to recharge and supercharge your health, check out the link in the show notes and enter Dr. Seth 10 for 10% off your order. You won't regret it.
So, and you did Cambo also, right? Is this the same trip?
Cambo, yeah, the frog poison?
Yeah.
Oh my God, man. Yeah, that was the same trip. And so after the ayahuasca, then I did the Cambo, and Cambo is intense, man. It's really intense. Like for 15, 20 minutes, you are like, you know, in a very, everything in shamanic medicine was very, this trip was, it was a very painful trip, but I got to say, like, it really changed my life. And again, would I do it again? Absolutely. So I don't want to be talking smack about a shaman or anything. And the people watching this may have a different experience, but universally speaking, people will say that Cambo, which is a frog poison that they inject into your arm, and depending on how many dots that they inject into, you have a more intense of an experience. But yeah, I did 6 the first time, and then I did 9 the second time, and 9 was a lot more intense than the 6. But for the 20 minutes or so, you are just in this like state where mentally, physically, spiritually, you're just in complete chaos. But then after it wears off, like, it really is a spiritual cleanse, man. That's the best way for me to describe it. It's a spiritual cleanse. You just feel so much cleaner. Some people do rapé and then Cambo on top of that. And that's what I did too. And it was intense. But afterwards, like, I felt so clean and ready for the ayahuasca. And then when I did the ayahuasca, I was like, holy cow, this is a whole nother experience. But the thing is, brother, shamanic medicine heals, man.
Yeah.
Like, I don't have any affiliations with these guys, but like, they heal. And there's so many people who fully attest to that. So I don't know if it's legal for me to say like everyone should be doing ayahuasca, but at some point, if people should decide that they want to experience something like that, hey, I wish you guys the best, because I did it for myself. And absolutely life-changing experience, and I would do it again. I intend to go back probably in February of next year to re-experience that.
Nice. And where did you go again? Dominican?
I went to the Dominican Republic, yeah. But there are a lot of like centers in like Peru and in Mexico that have like more of like a hotel setting, and they have the more, you know, touristy experience. And that could be great too. That guy, Dave Asprey from Bulletproof, now he has Danger Coffee. Like, he did it, in Peru, and he did it in like one of these like luxury places. But I went into the jungle, man. I went hardcore, and that's the way I want to do it.
Real deal. So if you could give us like two or three words for ketamine versus ayahuasca versus cambo versus psilocybin.
Okay. Psilocybin is more of a softer but precious psychedelic experience. Ketamine is a little bit more cold and quick. A little bit more, it's synthetic, so it's cold and quick. Ayahuasca is that grandmother that loves you so much, but she will keep it real with you. She will make sure you understand that you got to respect nature, respect Aya, and she ain't fucking around, but she loves you. MDMA, I don't know, man. I don't know about MDMA. Like, I really feel like it's damaging to the brain. So that's not something that I just want to like jump into, because I've done enough MDMA to know that like, man, the day afterwards, I just feel like my neurotransmitters are like done. And you just feel like ass for the next like couple of days. Like, kind of like if someone goes on a cocaine binge. I'm sure a lot of people have tried it here, but you know, like, you feel great, but it's almost like borrowed pleasure and energy from the future. So the next 2 days, you just feel like hell. So I don't know. It's kind of hard for me to highly recommend MDMA, but I do see potential in that, especially if someone has like some serious trauma and they need to process that with a therapist. Like, that one session or a few sessions for that matter, the benefits outweigh the potential cons of like damaging your brains maybe. But it's kind of hard for me to recommend MDMA, but that was a lot more than two, three words. Sorry.
No, that's perfect though. So you've had all these experiences. Where do you see the future of like medicine, healthcare, psychiatry here in America, but just worldwide in general?
I believe that what I'm seeing now is definitely a more push for like a holistic wellness experience than the traditional medicine. Like, so more people are catching on. They're like, yeah, man, Western medicine, it's all about like prescribing chemicals and talking about disease and stuff. Like, I want to get mentally well. I don't want to just keep going to a mental illness treatment center. So I think more people are buying into the wellness. The issue is, my friend, is that, you know, there are some beautiful people like you, me, and the people watching this, but there are also scum of the earth, greedy businessmen out there. You know, like these people that run big pharma and all this shit, right? Certain politicians and so on. So unfortunately, greed within people exists. And there are a lot of these people creating these holistic wellness centers, which is a complete scam. You go in there and it's the same old bullshit. They just call it that. They don't do anything holistic. I've visited these centers and they're like, yeah, you see, we serve like health foods and they have like cereal. And yeah, I see the apples and the bananas there, but you're also serving pancakes and all this other processed shit, calling it like real like health foods and stuff like that. So I don't know, man. Like, so point being is, I do believe that there is going to be a push for holistics, but people here have to do a better job in recognizing what's BS and what's legit. And I really do believe, like, kind of like the message that you and Dr. Brad and myself give all the time, like, we have to be the CEO of our own health destinies. Like, we have to really, you might need a medication or someone to teach you how to eat cleaner and do more of the namaste stuff to help heal yourself. But you still got to do the work, and you still have to take charge of putting the stuff into your mouth and moving your body and thinking and practicing certain mental exercises. So like, people really have to take responsibility for themselves and have other people assist them, you know, because ultimately the doctor works for you. You're the boss. Your employee, the doctor, has to assist you on your health journey, or a shaman, or a nutritionist, yogi, so on, or Dr. Seth Gerlach for that matter. So that I'm super firm on that message. Like, you have to take care of yourself first.
No, that's perfect. And then, so you started your own supplement line, right? And kind of recently. Tell us about that a little bit.
Yeah, man. I think one of the most popular psychiatric medications out there is Adderall. Like, you know, everyone, their mother nowadays, like, are aware that they have ADHD. Forget the fact that YouTube is very addicting, and sometimes school could be very boring if you have a lousy teacher. But everyone now has ADHD. So Adderall, there's even a shortage on Adderall. I don't know if you're aware. Yeah. Okay. So Adderall, what it does, the way it works, is it stimulates your brain to trigger the release of dopamine and norepinephrine. And these are neurotransmitters that help you feel good. It gives you a sensation of pleasure, motivation, and focus. So that's what it does. But Adderall does not have a single molecule of dopamine or norepinephrine in there. It just triggers the release of whatever you have in your body. So what I noticed over the years is that when someone gets prescribed like Adderall or any of these psych meds, like after some time, they have to increase the dose. And then they get the desired effect. And then later on, they have to increase the dose more after they develop a tolerance to it. What happens is that it's not so much that the medication isn't working. It's just that your body is being depleted of the dopamine and the norepinephrine. So once I started offering people foods that are rich in the amino acid tyrosine, for example, tyrosine is an amino acid that gets converted to dopamine and norepinephrine in your body. Of course, you know that people don't want to eat the avocados and the nuts and seeds and the bananas and the grass-fed beef, they just eat their shit. And then so I started recommending cocktails of supplements. You know, take tyrosine along with the good B complex and magnesium and DLPA. And these are things that will help boost your dopamine levels naturally. And they started complying with that. But they were complaining about the fact that they had to take like 8 different supplements to boost your dopamine levels. So that's why I created a company that combines all these ingredients in one, like combo cocktails of like formulas to help boost serotonin and dopamine and endorphins for that matter. You know, also easier ways for people to take in magnesium, because I'm sure you recommend magnesium for a lot of people, man. But magnesium for mental health purposes, like helps people fall into a deeper level of sleep, helps people with a sense of relaxed and calm. Great for your bones and mineral and things of that nature too, but more for mental health purposes, like great for anxiety and sleep. So, but people are complaining that they don't want to swallow magnesium tablets. So I created liquid magnesium. So the company is about like making mental health products easier and more simplified. So that's what we started.
I've tried about products 3 or 4 years and ago. I love them. Yeah, I've had the magnesium and I've had what the powder one again?
Oh yeah, the powder one. I got it right here. So it's called Mental Wellness. This is our flagship product, and this combines like a bunch of ingredients that help your body produce serotonin, dopamine, and endorphins, which are the 3 main neurotransmitters that these psych drugs are always trying to manipulate. So I'm saying, okay, if you're going to take psych meds, that's fine. But just know that these meds are only manipulating and influencing what you already have in your brain. And if you don't have these nutrients to produce these neurotransmitters, then why are you on these psych meds? Because it's not really working with much. So give your body what it needs so that maybe you don't even need the stuff. But if you are going to do what you're going to do with these psych meds, like at least give your brain what it needs so that the meds could even do its thing. So this is something that we recommend to our clients all the time and obviously online as well. So thanks for the plug.
Yeah. I love that approach. So you were big with us with the health freedom stuff back in the day. And it's been a crazy 2.5-3 years or so.
Yeah.
Where do you see the future going with all this stuff? Is it control? Is it, you know, lockdowns? Is it wild stuff? Or are we getting out of it? What do you think is happening?
So I like to take credit for this because I'm one of the few people who were saying from the beginning that this isn't about our health, but it's about AI and it's about the currency. I really do believe that this is a financial reset agenda, and there's the big boys who understand that AI is a much more efficient way of like doing things. And they, for whatever reason, want more of this AI and less human action. So I think this is a big AI, like the 4th industrial revolution is the rise of AI and the reset of our currency situation. So when people are complaining about what they did with the vaccines and big pharma and stuff, like, yeah, but that was all a stepping stone to collapse the economy, to reset the global currency situation and replace humans with robots and have this like robotic AI revolution. So that's what they want. I don't want that. You don't want that. I'm down with the way things were, or people doing their namaste thing and just living in peace. But for whatever reason, these guys want a more efficient system of control. And this is the way that they see it's their plan coming into fruition through resetting the currency and through AI, a better system of control. So yeah, that's unfortunately what I see. But, you know, I was talking to my buddy Rodney Lavoie Jr. the other day, and Crystal Tini, and there are people that are actively like creating these off-grid communities and looking for properties near somewhere in Mexico. Like the cost of living is like pennies on the dollar there. And for example, in the Dominican Republic, man, 1 month of living in this like namaste jungle community, there is a community there. I call it a jungle, but there is a community. It's $100 a month to live there, man.
Wow.
It's $100 a month. And, you know, they have access to like fresh fruits and vegetables and meats and stuff like that. And cost of living is like so much cheaper there. So there are people that are just like, screw it, man. I don't want to be a part of the system. I'm going to move there. Unfortunately for my ass, you know, I'm in a situation where I have this practice. I'm a part of the system. It's kind of hard for me to pick up and leave and just start all over, man. So there are people who are very excited about like, you know, screw the system. Like, I don't want to be a part of this. I want to create something awesome for myself and my family and my friends and hang out with people that I want to hang out with and educate our kids the way I want them to out of the system. So there are people very excited about that. And I do see like Alex Zek becoming a leader of one of these communities, like him starting something really big out there with our friends and our audience and our friends like joining. And I could see that being a very beautiful thing. But but for the other half, I don't I'm not very hopeful that like AI is just going to be like, you know what? Let's just chill out with this AI thing because it's really messing up humanity. Like, I don't see people stopping with that. And I don't think anything's stopping the destruction of our currency. So people who are poor, they didn't really have much savings. Good for you guys, man. Because we're like all the people who actually saved, man, I think, you know, for the elites, that's going to be one thing. But for the general people like who really like worked hard to save, like, oh, man, like I don't think it's looking good for our currency right now.
Right. I did an interview with Versan Algera. He and his brother started this company, Black Swan Capitalists, and they help you with financial advice and stuff. But he's on the same page too. And I agree with everything you said. From the beginning, it's all been about control. The vaccine wasn't really about health. It was a control mechanism. Now they're crashing the financial system, bringing their own CBDC. But Versan was talking about how Klaus Schwab, I think he said AI would cut 500 million jobs from around the world, something like that. Just something astronomical, you know, but, and then he was talking about things to do with your money or your assets. If we're thinking the dollar is collapsing or they're trying to crash this whole financial system and things like, he was talking about things like cryptos, precious metals, other assets, physical stuff, you know, that you have in times like this. And, but I know you're into crypto and some other stuff too. That's why I was just kind of bringing it up. Super interesting.
Oh, yeah,
that's our episode.
But
on here if you haven't listened to it.
What episode was that?
Episode number two, and that's for everyone listening. If you haven't listened to that, it's super interesting.
Okay. Yeah, I'm not really like someone who's trying to invest in crypto or, you know, silver and things of that nature to make bank, to be clear. I'm just sick and tired of the government taking my money from the bank through inflation. I'm getting robbed here. I'm sick and tired of that. So I'm like, okay, where can I park some of my money? So what I do, like the Bitcoin thing, like I don't know where it's going, man, but it wasn't cool to buy like little bits of Bitcoin at 50,000. Now it's like 30,000 or 20 something. So that's not a good feeling. But what I do now personally for me, like 20% of whatever I make, I put it into silver. I just buy actual silver coins and it's better that than putting it in the bank, in my opinion. So let's just hope that like we never get to a point where we have to use silver to buy bread and grass-fed beef from one another. But I just know that silver is like silver and gold are universal currencies accepted everywhere or like recognized as money everywhere. So I trust more that more than people who just constantly printing more and more fiat currency. Like, I just don't trust that, man.
Right. And I think silver has a big upside, you know, the utilitarian use of it. It's in so many different things. It's in TVs, it's in computers, it's in cars, it's in solar stuff everywhere. And demand is growing exponentially each year, but we're not pulling more out of the ground. And the price has been so manipulated, I think, for so long that I think the true value of it is well beyond where it's at right
oh,
now.
Oh, yeah. And for people watching this, I started buying some silver back in 2011. And at that time, silver was trading for about $35 an ounce. Now it's like, what, $28 an ounce? So like, you know, about a decade later, it's actually a little bit cheaper. So I think they're artificially like suppressing the price of silver. So again, not financial advice, but a lot of smart people are buying a little bit of silver. You don't want to put all your eggs into Bitcoin or gold, silver, whatever. But I would say just a little bit, you know, whatever you feel like you could afford per paycheck. Like, so 20% of my paycheck goes into that for now. And then we'll see silver crashing in about a year. But like you said, there's tremendous like modern day uses for it. So it's not going anywhere. It's actually something that you hold in your hand that's worth something, unlike a dollar bill, man. It's a piece of paper that they keep printing more of.
Yeah. And as these banks keep failing, they're going to keep bailing them out and printing more money. And yeah, it's a whole thing. Anyways, wrapping up with a few questions here. So I know you do a lot of IG lives. So again, I'll put Dr. Joe's IG handle below. Because I'm telling you, instead of watching Netflix at night, just flip on IG, see if Dr. Joe's on. You will be entertained beyond belief. He has props. He has multiple guests on his show. It is awesome. So like, you've interviewed so many people. Who are the coolest interviews or people that you've done with so far, or they stick out in your mind?
Wow. No one's ever asked me that. That's actually a very exciting, fun question. I would say my favorite guy to interview, and I've interviewed him probably about 3 or 4 times, is this guy, Reza Islam. So he's one of the leaders of the Black Islamic community, and he's been talking mad smack about Big Pharma and all this stuff with the vaccines and all this stuff, right? But he is just such a powerful speaker that even if he's talking about something negative, the way he talks about them, like he's just calling them out, and like you just want to do like 50 push-ups after you listen to that guy's like lectures. It's like a sermon, man. He knows how to speak. And interestingly, he's someone who had a stuttering issue when he was a kid, he said. So that just shows you, like, it's not how you start, it's how you finish that counts. And somehow he's figured out a way to overcome and become one of the best speakers that I've ever witnessed. So, Reza Islam. I'll say I really enjoy my lives with David Icke. Although David Icke, you have like 1 or 2 questions and then he just speaks and he doesn't give you another chance to ask another question. So he just goes on and on. And his is like, some of his stuff could be pretty dark, but interestingly, and Seth, I know that you're a very spiritual kind of dude, but David Icke is very, very namaste. You know, he talks about enlightenment and spirituality, and you feel very light after you talk to a guy like them. Although his content could be really dark, like you just feel like more namaste afterwards. And I do believe, some people believe that he's not a good person. Everything in my soul says that he's a good dude. So David Icke. And then third is I really love Dr. Christiane Northrup. She's someone like I consider her to be like my fairy godmother, and she's been there for me in my time of need. When I'm feeling like shit, I'm depressed, I call her, and then she's been giving me tremendous support. I've never met her in person, but when I do my lives with her, we just talk about women's health and the state of the world, and she's bad, man. She's got, you know, a little pep in her step. Like she's a force to be reckoned with for sure, but super kind, sweet, lovely lady, but she has that fight in her too, which I respect. Yep. So I would say those are my top three.
That's so cool. I love that, man. So before we wrap up here, like I said, this is the Uncensored Truth podcast. And we started this because we want to talk to people like you and hear all the cool stuff that we can't talk about sometimes on the interwebs, you know? So from your experience, what is one censored truth that you want people to know about, that you are working to get out to the ethers, to the world?
Wow. One censored truth right now. I mean, I think everyone knows what's up with the vaccines. I think everyone knows that. So you mean to our audience or to people who don't know anything about what's happening and they're forced to watch this segment right now?
Anything.
Anything. Well, this isn't censored, but if there's anything that I would want people to be aware about is that I should make a post about this, but eating food, your relationship with food and what you put into your mouth is more intimate and sacred than sex. You know, if you really think about it, people have sex and they're very careful with who they choose to sleep with, and there's penetration involved, and then that's it. and they're very picky. Well, the people listening to this show, at least, very picky with who they choose to sleep with, right? It's a very sacred experience. But think about it, man. If you eat a mango, you eat a piece of meat, you're not only putting that inside your body, but that food and that nutrient becomes a part of you. And that's hell of a lot more sacred and intimate than sex. That becomes you. So I want everyone to know that and be very mindful of what they choose to put into their body, including prescription chemicals. Hopefully, if you're doing something like that, you're balancing that out with tons of like really healthy organic fruits and vegetables and good quality meats. And, you know, you're putting those things into your body that's so sacred and intimate that's becoming a part of you. So you really are not what you eat, but what you ate. And people have very poor eating habits. And I would love for everyone to like consider that as a first line of defense and an opportunity to grow and prosper as a first line more than anything else. That's what I would want people to know.
Love it. Dr. Joe, thanks so much for coming on, brother. I really appreciate you. I consider you a friend throughout all this craziness. And oh, it's amazing. Tell people where they can find you.
Dr. Seth, I love you back, brother. And again, you're just one of the coolest, goodest dudes I've ever met and had the experience with connecting with. So yeah, thank you. And it's an honor to be on your show, man. People could find me on, I guess, my Instagram, YojiMD, YojiMD. And for the people who are interested in learning a little bit more about the mental wellness supplement line, it's beyondrecovery.com, beyondrecovery.com. And for the people watching this, if you use my promo code STREETMD, you get 11% off on any products there. So check out the mental wellness. That's our flagship product.
Awesome. All right, Dr. Joe, appreciate it. Thanks, everyone, for listening. Everyone have an awesome day.
Thank you, everyone.
Thanks for joining us in this week's podcast. You know, we need more brave people like you who can share this message of hope and truth to a world that's completely upside down. If this podcast resonated with you, I'd ask you to share it with a friend, or even better, share it on socials and tag me. For more resources on natural health, freedom merch, and my mission, check out drsethgerlach.com. As always, subscribe to the show to catch every new episode that comes out, and leave us a review so we can spread these uncensored truths with as many people as possible. Thanks so much for listening. God bless you.